We'll press right on and let call to order. It's 3:15. We're 15 minutes late, but there's just so much going on in the building and conflicts that it's hard to get us all together at the same time. February 11th, 2010, present today, myself, co-chair Wes Keller, co-chair Bob Heron is excused, and we have with us Representative Sista, and Representative Lynn, Representative Seaton, Representative Tammy Wilson, and Representative Lindsay Holmes. On the agenda today, we're going to be starting with SB 101. It's a bill on questionnaires and surveys. And if you're here to testify or have input on the other two bills, HB 309 and HB 265, we will do our best. We'll see how it goes. There's quite a few calling in, and I think that we'll have time to at least introduce those bills and get them on the record, but you never know for sure. Before we get started on SB 101, I want to point out that Representative Peggy Wilson has a similar bill. It was HB 130, and it was heard last year a couple times in House Education Committee. And she asked that the bill be heard and deferred to Senator Davis, whose bill has been through several committees on the Senate side. And that's SB 101. So that's the one we're going to be discussing today. So the way we'll do it is just typical. We'll have Senator Davis's staff introduce himself and introduce the bill. And then I would like to ask the committee to ask clarification questions. And then we'll go into public testimony, and we'll see how it goes and take it from there. I want to point out, this bill has raised a lot of interest, and I want to say right up front, data are good. I think that's right to say it, right? I never did get that quite straight, but data is good, data are good. This is not about whether or not the data is valuable. Data is very valuable. It is the essence of so many programs that we have in government. But that's not the question. The question is how we collect it, how we're getting the data, and especially in the context of respecting the privacy of families and private information that may be family private information. And I suspect that that's what the debate will be. I just want to say that the people that I know that are the strongest for getting this, making it easier to collect this data, their whole, I vouch for them, you know, because you can't do anything. You can't take public money and try to do something to address the problems that our children and people face in our society without having the data on which to make those decisions. So so not only is data good, but the people that are supporting SB 101, you know, for the people who may be on the other side here are not bad. They're good folks, you know. So let's have a good discussion, and then we can make a good policy decision and press on this thing. So with that, if you would, identify yourself and present the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. I'm sorry she could not be here today. She wanted to be. Senate Bill 101 is an act relating to questionnaires and surveys administered in the public schools. The purpose of Senate Bill 101 is to change the parental consent requirement on the Voluntary and Anonymous Youth Risk Behavioral Survey, YRBS, from active to passive, that is, from written or express to implied consent if the parent does not object or deny permission in writing for the student to participate in the survey after lengthy and detailed new notice requirements are sent to the parents at least 2 weeks in advance of the survey. There will be ample time and opportunity for the parent to review the survey with instructions on how to opt out. The student independently may also decline to participate or answer specific questions in this completely voluntary and anonymous survey under Senate Bill 101. Written permission is still required to be obtained from the student's parent or legal guardian for all other surveys, anonymous or not, that inquire into personal or private family matters of the student and not a matter of public record or subject to public observation. Obtaining written parental consent for enough students to participate in the YRBS survey has proven expensive and a tremendous burden on school districts. Though research and experience suggests that the vast majority of parents would consent to their students participating in this voluntary and anonymous survey, many schools are unable to use the data they collect because not enough parental consent forms are returned. Failure of parents to return written consent forms has been found more often to be the result of lack of interest or attention rather than refusal. The YRBS is probably the most important survey administered every other year in public schools across the country in conjunction with the Centers for Disease Control, CDC. The CDC requires a minimum of 60% participation at the state level to validate statistical sampling, assessment, recording, and reporting of reliable results. The Youth Risk Behavior Survey helps guide and evaluate important health and prevention programs. State and federal grant programs that rely on these surveys include tobacco prevention and control, obesity prevention, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke, safe and drug-free schools, substance abuse prevention, injury prevention, including violence and suicide prevention, HIV, STD prevention, and more. Federal, state, and private resources cannot properly be employed to assist parents, students, educators, planners, and policymakers without valuable population-based information on youth to help understand the important health and social issues that affect students' behavior, happiness, and success in the future. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Does the Representative Wilson?
Through the chair, you made a comment that it was that you believe it's lack of interest of the parents. How do you know this?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this may be anecdotal, but I have been told this by members of school districts that deal with it. Further information, you may inquire of people who may be testifying to this. But the school districts have to go to a great deal of trouble to follow up on students that don't return the forms. I'm told that sometimes we have a very close breaking point of something like 62% when you're looking for 69 to 79% participation. They have to actually go back to the parents and ask, where is the form? I understand from the procedure that's involved that the students are often given the forms, the written permission forms to return to the school, which, you know, if a student is not particularly interested, I have a letter from another individual that indicates that often the most at-risk students don't return the forms, even though they're handed back by the parent. So whether that is something that could be remedied or not, I don't know. But if this survey often reaches close to proper statistical sampling level for validation by the CDC and we don't make it, it has a tremendous impact on every one of these agencies I described and the schools in trying to determine how to best educate the students and protect them.
Follow-up, Chair?
Follow-up.
Sure. Maybe I don't understand the process. Maybe I should start at the beginning. What age are we talking that we give this? Do we give it every year?
It's every other year, through the chair, Representative Wilson, that they give this particular test. And I believe that there are two types, and we have the department here that can explain that. But the one that is particularly important is the one at the high school level. I think it's really 9th through 12th grade. There may be an earlier test on health surveys that is given to younger students. But this particular test, the YRBS, is the one that I believe is regarding 9th through 12th grade. And I can be corrected by the department on that if necessary.
Chairman, I'll wait till the ones that I think most of these have to do with that, but just one comment. I just am very concerned when you say something that parents, you know, have a lack of interest, and I'd just like to see if anybody there has data showing that the parents are lacking versus maybe the teenagers aren't getting the notes home. Or, you know, it's more of the process.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I looked at these words a couple of times, and it may be semantics. The words we used in the previous sponsor statement said apathy. And I thought, well, that's not appropriate either. It's hard to describe why a parent would not get this form back. But this, I am, in reading through our own information, I'm told the notice on this can often go out through the school's newsletter. And a lot of parents may not even read it because they have so much information on a newsletter. Maybe that, again, is a procedural problem that needs to be remedied, that they have to have a very specific form that goes to these parents at least 2 weeks in advance. They have to have perhaps a return written document form that explains that it must go back. Maybe they should offer them a sealed envelope that all they do is stick a stamp on it and it goes directly to the school district and not through the child back to the school. They can get lost in a backpack.
I like those ideas.
On the, this is, I'm hesitating because this isn't really a question, but I just want to go on record and say that I have met parents who I would never classify as apathetic, and I know that you refrain from saying that, and I appreciate that. And they didn't sign because they didn't, that was their choice not to sign. And, you know, the numbers elude me on that. Any other questions for the author? The representative of the office.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have serious concerns about the content of the survey itself. When this came up by the representative Peggy Wilson a couple years ago, I spoke in depth on it. As a matter of fact, I wrote a blog on the subject, which I'll spare you the reading of it now, but it's available to anybody that wants to look at it. We have two issues here. One is the content of the survey itself, which I call a sociological strip search. But what we're talking about here, though, is not the content so much as changing it from opting in to opting out. And the number of reasons why this is not returned, perhaps, one may be that the parents just don't want the kids to do this. And I just have serious concerns with the whole thing, and whether it's this survey or any other survey or anything else, I think parents have a right to positively opt in and not opt in by doing nothing. It's too easy to to pervert the system like that. I think we got to stop taking parents out of the circle of responsibility for things, and then blaming them for not exercising parental responsibility.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, I agree completely, and I think about this, you know, as a parent myself, if some of these questions would seem offensive or that they might promote improper activity, I've given a lot of thought to everything about this survey, and the only answer that I've been able to come up with is the fact that this is an anonymous survey. The procedures that have been described to me involve putting this survey in a sealed envelope by the individual student. It goes into a group of envelopes to the teacher. The teacher never has a chance in a small school to know who's doing what. It goes back to the school district under the state. And so that may be, there may be no perfect system, but it's the only way that it is both anonymous and voluntary. The student doesn't have to do it. They're not forcing a child to do this, and if parents are talking to their children and they say, I'm not signing this, I don't want you to do it, the child can go to school without a written document and still refuse to take this test. I don't know that this is an adequate answer or perfect, but I do know that from a national level, it's so important that this survey be given so that all of our agencies, from the federal government to the state to the local agencies and the state government and districts, can adequately deal with children's behavior and try to modify it or prevent improper behavior, or to give them education on prevention of various diseases, whether it's diabetes or any other thing that comes up. So there is tremendous value, as Representative Keller indicated, in getting any kind of information you can. And the question is, how do you get it? And the answer that we were given in coming up with this bill is that The procedure that's being done now is not adequate to for the districts to get enough participation in order to adequately get information back, because we're not going to get information back in Alaska if we don't validate our survey at the CDC. Whether that's the answer or not, I don't know. As I said, there may be other ways that the school districts can deal with this, but this was one answer, particularly since it was an anonymous survey that thought that they could use this system.
Just one quick follow. I do want to put on the record that please don't misinterpret what I'm saying here, because I think the intent of the teachers and the intent of the administration and the intent of the other folks who are trying to stop or at least slow down some of these horrendous behaviors, I think the intent is good. But I think the unintended consequences far outweigh any potential good. But again, I support anybody who's trying to make a positive difference in the students' behavior, especially on subjects such as this. But I think not only is the content flawed, in my opinion, the process is seriously flawed, but good intent here.
if I could, just a little bit of housekeeping I forgot to point out. We don't intend to move this bill today. It's to get the questions on the table. And I just want to tell the committee that we have all kinds of experts in the room. You know, we have experts online. You know, we have folks that that we could ask technical questions about the YRBS itself. And you can look around and see that. I do want to say that I have several questions. One is on the wording, and one of them is I'm going to take a little time to lay the groundwork, because in reading the minutes, it has not been addressed on this bill yet. But with that, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wanted to ask the sponsor's representative, when a question was asked about when the survey was administered, you said, I believe, that the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, that's the one provided by the United States Center for Disease Control, was in high school, and there might be another survey given in to younger grades. My reading of this is the only survey that this covers as an opt-out is the YRBS, and every other survey must be opted into. So did I misunderstand you, or what?
No, through the chair, I was not trying to indicate, Representative Seaton, that any other survey that would delve into privacy matters would not require consent, whether it's at a lower age or high school age. In fact, that was stated in the sponsor statement. It is the first section of this unamended section A of Alaska Statute 1403.110. And so that hasn't changed.
Thank you. Representative Lynn.
Well, I just want to put on the record some of the statement I make, which may not be pleasing to some, but I'm not just saying anything I'm saying some degree of experience. Not only am I a parent of six, but I'm also a retired public school teacher. And I do have a master's degree in educational administration, so I think I bring, you know, some degree of expertise to this.
Thank you. a question I want to ask, and it kind of is a follow-up, I guess, on Representative Seaton's a little bit, but did you mean for the YRBS, or did the author mean for the YRBS to be given without notice of a date or a description of content? Notice of opportunity to review or a description of how the test may be administered. And the reason I ask that question is that if you read the first section A, it says except as in what is referenced in G, which is the YRBS, and then it goes on and lays out the guidelines. It talks about the anonymous survey in sections that are not in the bill, but they're in state law. There's some guidelines there for the anonymous survey, and there's a section there on the non-anonymous survey. And then the next section D that was there in replace lays out the criteria, that has to be followed. The school district has to follow to give the test. And then we get into G down below, and it exempts the YRBS. And it's at least unclear you know, is the did the author intend for the YRBS to be exempt from Section D that lays out that criteria?
Representative Keller, Section D was, it still applies. The only thing that was done was to really extend the due process requirements of giving written notice to the parents with an extended list that went beyond the three items that were under subsection D before. I don't know if that's in your hearing package, but I have a copy of the original law here, and it goes on for 8 items: the sponsor of the survey, the name of the person, notice of the opportunity to review the questionnaire, description of how the survey will be administered to the student, a description how to submit written permission or denial of permission to participate in this survey, including anonymous or specific questionnaire or survey, notice of opportunity for the student to refuse or refuse to participate. Due process was considered one of the main issues in trying to create something that could both protect the parents and the students' privacy, the family's privacy. At the same time, it permitted more of these surveys to get back to the school district. Again, I don't know if it's perfect, but this was a tremendous rewrite in that section just to accommodate that, so it does apply as I read it. Now, you know, we can get our drafter online at the next hearing if you wish.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I would, please. And I was not impugning the motives. I was just saying that it may not be accomplishing what the author intends. Well, when I read it the first time, I got confused, so I pulled the whole law and I read it 2 or 3 or 4 times. And the reason I finally asked the question is because it gives criteria for the notification, and then it says the YRBS is exempt, and then it says there has to be a notice. And it sounds like it's a repetition, and you wonder, you know, okay, what really applies here and what doesn't. And we don't need to go forward here with a law that's ambiguous, and I think that that needs to be nailed down. So I would like to hear from the drafter eventually on that. So any other questions on that topic or not? Comments? The next question I'd like to get into, if I could, and again, it's going to take me a few minutes, because, and that is simply the constitutionality of the bill in general. And I would like to just if you would, think with me on this whole thing to see where I'm coming from. But when you read Section A of the law, not the part that has changed, but Section A of the law, that we have in front of us there, it says a school district principal or other person in charge of a public school or teacher in a public school may not administer or permit to be administered in a school a questionnaire survey, whether anonymous or not, that inquires into, here's the point, personal or private family affairs. To me, that's a flag that we've got to pay special attention. And I just want to have a discussion on this before on the record before we proceed. When I go back and I read the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment that went into effect nationally in 2002, there's a clear statement. It says you have to have written permission if you have a non-Department of Education survey that addresses these private matters. The private matters are the political affiliations or beliefs of a student, or the student's parent, the mental or psychological, any mental or psychological problems of the student or the student's family, sex behavior, sex attitudes, illegal, antisocial, self-discriminating. I won't keep going, but you know, the point that I'm trying to make is surely those are indeed private family issues and concerns, and so we need to look at them in that light. And then I want to remind you that the federal law, even though it exempts surveys that ask those questions that are sponsored by CDC, it's a different constitution. It's a constitution of the United States of America. In Alaska, we have that section, in the first section, the basic fundamental right to privacy. The right of the people to privacy is recognized and shall not be infringed. And the legislature shall implement this section. It's a question that needs to be raised. It's a question that needs to be discussed on this bill. I'm really convinced of it. The Constitution is meant to be interpreted. That's given a task on us legislators, you know, and I'm sure by raising, I'm hoping that by raising the question, we'll get a review of this in the Judiciary Committee to see what they say. But all of us, it's our job to interpret what's in the Constitution. And I don't mean to be preaching to the choir. I think all of us know that. It's people's law, and that's what we do, is we figure out if it should be addressed or not. The real question is there a fundamental, constitutionally given right here that is being violated or restricted by requiring an opt-out instead of the existing active permission, you know, that is given to talk and answer questions on this private matter. If you think about another fundamental right, can you imagine what would happen if one of our boroughs, for example, said, okay, no, we're not going to have any firearms in our borough. And we're going to, you know, that's just not, we're not going to do that. But of course, you have the right. So you got, but if, so if you sign a paper and bring it in that's saying you're opting out of this restriction that we're putting on you, then you can have your firearm. See, what I'm saying is that the, it has to be thought about, I think, and discussed in that manner as it has been on other issues. The constitutional rights, as you know, can be denied. Typically, I think they say they can be denied based on what is common public good. You know, in other words, if and in this case, this is where I want to go back and say that may indeed be the case. You know, maybe this is a common public good, and we need to look at expanding into infringing, I would say, on what a parent's rights would be. But the problem there is that the test that's used for that is you have to use the least restrictive means to get there. And we've been proving for the last 10 years that we can get this YRBS data without having a active written, with the active written permission that's required under the, we're using it. Just the other day, we had some delightful testimony here 2 days ago by people from my district, and they showed us, you know, the YRBS data that they were using to show that we really have a problem in Wasilla and we have to press on. And I just say we have to pay, if we're getting it, then that may be the least restrictive means to get it is to pay for it. And that's the problem. See, good data is incredible. I used to be in business. I built spec homes, speculation homes. You can bet I cared a whole lot before I got into it how much the materials were going to be, what the market was, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I would look at that, and that's how I'd make my decisions. Home Depot down the street, that's why it's here. They take data and they crunched it and they decide, okay, this is a good way to go. You know, we got to have it. There's nothing wrong with getting the data. The question is, the problem is, I guess, that it's expensive to get. And we've been paying more for it to get it and to use it. And I'm just raising the question is, can we really justify here taking away, I don't mean to be pejorative, but I want you to understand me. What I see is taking away some of the rights of the parents, you know, when we can get it another way, even if it costs more money. This question is too big for a debate on the floor of the House of Representatives. That's why I want it here, and I want to have it in the Judiciary Committee. That's why I'm raising it. And again, you know, same thing is don't make the mistake of presuming that, you know, you're on the one side, I'm on the other. You know, that isn't the point. We got to have good data. We listened to Alaska Mental Health or the Trust, Jeff Jesse, yesterday, and he used the term on some of the programs that they're extremely data-driven. From a government perspective, that's what we have to have. We're spending public money. We have to know that when we spend the money to help somebody with a substance abuse problem or whatever, that it's that it's really doing it, you know, that we have a record and can show. So we have another question. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Comment slash question, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And
One other thing, if I could, Representative Lindsay, just that Representative Sista had to leave. She didn't go away mad. Another conflict. And I wanted to say she's excused for sure. I'm sorry, Representative Lindsay.
Oh. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I find it amusing either way. Just a comment and follow-up and question that may be more appropriate for the sponsor's representative, or it may be more appropriate for the department. I'll just put it out there. I too was impacted by the very good presentation we had 2 days ago by the MATSU coalition. But as I recall, one of the problems that they faced was they were able to give us the national data from the YRBS, but the problem was they had to go out and do their own, precisely because the YRBS, there was not enough participation in the MATSU on the YRBS to have any kind of statistical validity, and therefore they had to go out and do their own data collection, and that was one of the problems faced by this group that was combating alcohol and drug abuse. And so I was going to pose this question for, I know we have a big panel of experts who could address this, and it may not be the man sitting at the witness table right now, but my question is, how prevalent is that across the state under the current opt-out? Do we have communities across the state that are coming up with the same problem that this MATSU coalition that's trying so valiantly to combat drug and alcohol abuse? Do we have communities across the state that don't have enough participation under the current system and therefore can't use the data at all? The survey's being given. Some kids are filling it out, but they might as well not because we can't do anything with it. So I guess that would be my question for the experts.
Thank you, Representative Holmes. I just wanted to say that, as I stated on the record, I'm very proud of that group, and they very clearly said they really supported SB 101. You know, there's no question about that. And that's why I'm being, but one of the reasons I'm being very careful is that,
my
constituency. But I do think they did have Alaska YRBS data as I remember it. But
it was national.
Just national. Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, I'm sure there are people here that are experts in this, but I keep getting more and more information as I deal with this bill, but I had heard that there are school districts that can't participate in this state. I understand that maybe not every student is offered this test throughout the system. If you have 50,000 students in the Anchorage School District, they can speak to this. There might be certain classes in certain high schools. I don't know how they do it. But they have to get at least a 60% participation. I don't know that the 60% participation is statewide or just 60% participation on those eligible and selected for that survey. But if that's the answer, and it's a representative sampling based on good sampling data, then it may be adequate to determine that they can give a result back to that particular school district. It would be wonderful to have this statewide from everyone, but they won't take it from inadequate data sampling from a school district. They don't think it's representative or fair to report statistics. So it's basically what they're going to do is crunch numbers and indicate one type of behavior over another, and they don't want to misrepresent what's going on. So that has to be dealt with by people who deal with it every day, and I really don't have the answer to that.
Thank you, Tom. And I know you've been around here long enough to know that you're not under attack. We're just getting this question on the table. And I really thank you for indulging me in my long-winded question. But I wanted a response back when the experts come up here, and I want this question on the table and addressed. I wonder, one other thing in that context that's very interesting to me, just to demonstrate that it isn't just this issue. I mean, this issue has tended to divide, between two sides and that are pointing fingers at each other, in my estimation. But it's a question for every parent that's out there. In Juneau, right now, they give drug tests to children to see if they are qualified to play athletics, and they require the parents to have on record a active permission slip before they can be given a drug test. That's right here in town, and like I say, it's also part of the federal parent protection thing, And one other thing I'd like to point out is that I dropped a bill in this time that some of you know about that it has to do with eligibility for Medicaid. And, you know, again, data's good, right? So I'm asking for data. I want to know when we give somebody assistance if they have an addiction problem, and I want to get that data. So that's part of what I did is I provided that tool to the department or tried to, you know, that's my desire, so that the department can find out if there is indeed an addiction problem, you know, so they can spend their money wisely. So, you see, I am also guilty of trying to get the data because it's fine. But you know the first thing that came out? Almost, it was the same news release that where they asked me about the bill, and that was the ACLU saying this is not constitutional. And also, we've had somebody, you know, here in the House questioning the constitutionality of that bill. And that criteria needs to be reflected, you know, and thought about on this bill. And one other thing I want to say, I am not out to stop the bill. I want the question answered. There will be a vote on this bill. I've committed that to the sponsor and to Representative Peggy Wilson, and the vote will come. I'm not playing games. I just want everything out there on the table. So. Long-winded question. If one of my committee members did that to me, I might be chewing on their ear. But thank you. Any other questions for the sponsors? Okay, thank you, Tom. We have where to start. We have Fairbanks, LAO. We have John. We have Dr. Herbert in the room, our chief medical officer. Would you like to start or do wrap up? I would give that option to you.
I'm prepared to state the position of the administration and respond to questions.
Okay. Well, let's just wait a little bit on that testimony. And why don't we go to the Fairbanks LIO and just start there?
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry.
Would it be possible to have one of the school districts or something come up to answer some of those specific questions we had on the as how it's implemented before we go to the public testimony?
I appreciate the request, but what I just was thinking is that it might be good to get the response from the public to my question, you know, but leaving that on the table and let that be the basis for the testimony, and then let the response come if it's okay with you and okay with the experts in the room. Representative Wilson.
I kind of agree with Representative Seaton because I really can't go forward until because at this point I don't understand how it's being given.
And to whom?
Because I thought it was to all of them, and then I got a different. So I think in our head getting the procedure first will then give us better questions to ask the public if they even understand how it's all done.
That's then absolutely. Two against one. So then let's start in the room, and we'll start with Carl Rose, if it's okay, head of the ASB. And part of the reason I start there is my own school board and the Anchorage school board and a number of the school boards have come forward and said, we want 101 passed. So the association, I would assume, has knowledge of this. So.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. We have just met. We have a resolution. We are in support of Senate Bill 101. I'm not going to go into the value of the data. I think you've covered that very well. As a matter of necessity, in schools, if you were going to instruct someone in standards and you had a curriculum and you had your professional development and you provide an assessment to measure the success that you're having, that's the key here. With regard to the YRBS, if we were placing money into programs for prevention, intervention, whatever the case may be, what sense do we have that we're making progress? Now, the last YRBS that we received, I believe, was validated, I believe was 2005. We had some indicators there that showed that we were reversing the trend on some of the risk behaviors. Alcohol and drugs, teen pregnancy, and some violence in the schools. Without that measure, we have been putting money into programs such as Alaska ICE, the Initiative for Community Engagement. The whole idea behind our program, our initiative, is to ensure that if young people are going to be successful, they're going to be successful because of the communities that they come from. So the school, parents, and when I say community, it could be faith communities, it could be social clubs, adults taking responsibility for youth development. And we have done an evaluation of our program. We've been doing it now for, I think we're in our, I guess we'd be in almost our 10th year now, ninth year. What we have found is that students are making better decisions. Their behavior is improving by the data that we receive. But this data is not like the kind of information that we would get back from a survey such as the YRBS. We don't have enough data to validate that it's accurate because we don't have enough of a spread. And so rather than getting into the questions of how this is done and the processes, because they differ from school district to school district, what we do know is that our ability to get the data to validate that we are making the investments in the right areas and that we're getting the appropriate return on that investment is critically important. If I could just share with you, even if it's just a small percentage, but when you start to reverse the trends, that is a huge event that takes place. Because prior to 2005, the trend was upward. And not only did we stop, we actually reversed the trend in a few areas, but we don't have enough data to validate that because we don't have enough of a sampling. So I would just share with you, I understand the concern in our communities, and Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you bringing it up. This whole idea is it, you know, in the interest of the public's interest? I believe it is. When we talk about epidemic proportion in terms of drug and alcohol issues, that's exactly what they are. And if we can't get that information, anything that hinders our ability to get that information is very difficult. But I do understand the other side, and I'm very sensitive to that. What we're trying to do with the passage of this bill, one, it's anonymous, and I think that helps me somewhat. I have a couple sons. They're already out of school. I wouldn't object to something like that, especially if it was anonymous, and especially if the data was going to make a major contribution to understanding what the baseline is in terms of some of the things that affect us socially. So for that, the association is in support of this bill. We have been in support of a bill like this for some time. Some communities, it's easier to be able to get this kind of information, and I think you'll find, and in some of our communities that are involved in the community engagement, it's a little easier for them to get this kind of information back. But when you come from large districts, or if you're in districts that are dispersed districts, five or six schools that are spread out over 60,000 miles, there is a difficult time to get that done. So I do appreciate the sponsor taking a look at the anonymous effect of this bill survey. And I can see the public good in it, but I can also see why some people would be concerned, and I hope we can mitigate that somehow as we move it through the process. I'll try to answer any questions you might have, but I would say this. We have 53 school districts. They all go about this a little bit different. They all have a little different relationship in their communities, and many of their communities are very, very different in terms of how they're spread out. But I will try to answer any questions you have.
Representative Lynn.
In the locale, perhaps not in Alaska, but you know, locales where there's what you'd call an adequate return on this, what's the margin of error? Do you have any idea?
Well, I'm not a statistician. I really don't know what the margin of error is, but I think what if you can get upwards of a 65-70% return, you can get a pretty good idea of what your community is doing. You know, in many of our small single site communities where you're K through 12 in one building, you can get a pretty good return on a survey such as this. Well, as I mentioned, when you start to have multiple sites, it's a little more difficult.
And just one, perhaps somebody later on will know what the statistical margin of error is on places where they do have what they describe as adequate return. And you may not know the answer to this, but I'm putting it to you if somebody else can answer it later. Do you know of any private or parochial schools who do this survey?
I do not have that information, no.
Thank you.
Does through the chair, does everyone take this test in the high school, or is that also depending upon which school you're in?
As it is right now, we are required to have permission, and not everyone takes the test.
But it is offered to every child in the high school.
If we are able to get permission, yes.
Okay. And follow up, sir, through the chair, what happens if this does happen, and you still don't get 60%? To take the test, have you thought about another option that you might have?
Through the chair, in visiting with many of our school districts, this appears to be one of the largest hindering points that we have is this having to seek permission before rather than having more of a passive approach. In many of our smaller communities, there's very little difficulty in getting information from the communities and permission and support. But I would just share with you that the majority of our larger school districts have some real difficulty with this, and you could have half of our small school districts respond, and it wouldn't even be a fraction of what Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kenai, and Mat-Su have in terms of population. I think in that rail belt area, you're looking at somewhere between 75-80% of the enrollment in the state. So we are very, very different in terms of how easy it is to get information back.
If I could intercede before you ask a follow-up, I just want to point out that even though it's very different, there is one available thing that's there for all schools in the state of Alaska, and that's in subparagraph B or paragraph B in the law that is being addressed here. And for anonymous, I'm going to read it into the record because I think it's really significant to the discussion that you are having. For an anonymous questionnaire or survey, written permission required under A of this section may be obtained annually and is invalid until the commencement of the subsequent year or until the parent or guardian who gave the permission submits a written withdrawal of permission to the school principal. The reason I read that in, and it gives a two-week requirement, the reason I read that in is that when you have I know the Association of School Boards enough to know that you value community engagement, and that's a positive thing. But when you have a school district where there's a number of schools and they're dispersed, this option is available to that district. Is that all? When a parent comes in to enroll a student, there could be an explanation and interaction at that level, you know, to get the thing signed. But I'm sorry to interject that, but I think it needs to be in the conversation. Representative Wilson.
We're having the same conversation. Yeah. Okay, I homeschooled my children, so this may seem like a silly question, but do high school students go on field trips?
Yes, they do.
Okay, and when they go on a field trip, they have to have a permission slip brought back?
Yes, they do.
And how many times when you have a field trip does less than 60% of the children participate?
I really don't have that information. We're an association, and we don't operate schools independently. So I could get that information for you. I could put out a survey to get that information.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative C.
Thank you. As the association looked at SB 101, the chairman had asked a question on page 2, under this section about the district shall provide for each student, parent, or guardian notice and the opportunity to submit a written denial. Did Do you read that as being the same requirements as under the Section D about the schools shall provide the written notice and all of those eight provisions? Did the association look at the specific, or did you understand that, did you think that the specific requirement under the notice and opportunity for denial were those same factors and same procedures as under Section 2 of the bill?
Through the chair, we support the passive approval. We didn't look at the specifics of the bill and how it would be applied until such time as we have regulations that would guide us. But we do it a number of different ways. It is right now, it's pretty clear you have to have permission, and we haven't looked at the actual process that this bill would implement.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to ask, as people from school districts come up, if they could address that issue, because that was one issue that you had brought up, and just to make sure that we get that answer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Mr. Rose?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Patty Owen, I believe she is the real expert in the test itself. So we, right? No? No? No. Is Patty Owen here? Would she like to testify?
Patty's here for questions.
Yeah. Just for questions. Okay. Good enough. How about Kate? Is it Burkhart? And she's from the Mental Health Board Advisory Board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kate Burkhart. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And I preface my comments always by explaining that, as you know, the Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse were established by statute with certain responsibilities, which include giving advice to the executive and legislative branches. That is where we are coming from. We do not represent the position of the department or the governor's office with these comments. These comments are based on the position taken by the members of each board. So I only represent my board members. I do have prepared comments, but I also have some information that's responsive to some questions that have been raised.
Please,
so I'm
going
to start there first, sure. So I don't forget. And I'll start with Chairman Keller. I appreciate your thoughtful framing of the dialogue about the balancing act that is at issue here between the rights of parents and the very definite public interest in acquiring this information. And one of the questions you raised was, are we getting the information? And based on a review of the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, as it was administered since 1995, we've been doing it every other year since 1995, and as you know, active parental consent went into effect between the 1999 administration and the 2001 administration. Before active consent was required, the overall participation rate for schools was 82% in 1995 and 83% in 1999. The 1999 figure does not include Anchorage. They did not participate that year. And the student participation rate was 78 and 80 in those years. After active parental consent was required, the student participation rate dropped by at least 10% to 68% in 2003, 59% in 2005, and 68% in 2007. So there was a significant drop in the rate at which students were participating when the law changed. And so to get to the idea of, are we getting the information? In 2003 and 2007, the schools were able to meet that minimum threshold of 60%, just barely. 62% in 2003 and 60% in 2007. But in 2005, it only hit 55%. And in reaching that threshold, the school districts have had to spend a great deal on incentives, like pizza parties and things like that, to get the permission slips back. And some of the comments we've received around the state from areas like Anchorage, Kenai, here in Juneau, are that the efforts that go into getting the permission slips back, whatever they say, it's not trying to get permission back, it's just trying to get the slips back, can be very expensive, up to $90,000 sometimes. So that's diverting funds away from things schools should be doing to get permission slips back. So there was the question of other communities having difficulty in getting responses back. When the boards met in Kenai in the fall of 2008, we heard significant public comment from folks involved in the school districts there about the difficulties they had had in getting this information and the ways they had gone about, kind of like Matt Sue in their presentation talked about, getting the information they needed for effective data-driven policy and program decisions. So we've heard it there. Chairman Keller talked about drug testing here in Juneau. The folks working on that issue last year really did focus on YRBS data and trying to make a decision. So, and the struggles that the school district had had in getting that data were an issue. So it's not isolated to just Anchorage, although I think because they have so many students, it does present more there. So the question about parental interest.
Wait, got a question on that point.
I
just want to know, Kate, if you would, do you think that there was a benefit in those pizza parties and the extra effort that the school district went to get those slips back beyond the returning of the slips for YRBS?
I couldn't speak to that. I'm not in the schools, so I don't know if it improves social functioning or if it's a good thing for the kids. I do have some concerns at the amount of money that's being spent on incentives, especially since school districts have trouble keeping their teachers on and things like that. I mean, $100,000 is quite a bit. So I can't speak specifically to any ancillary benefits to the results of those incentives. I don't know.
Yeah, and I want to clarify that my question, as you phrased it, was that whether or not we're getting the data, that was a little bit more than that. It was whether or not we couldn't spend the extra time, money, and get data in a less restrictive means. There's a difference there, and there, I had no doubt that some of the schools were making it on the criteria, and others, you know, don't.
Yes.
So, thank you. Go your next point.
Question.
Representative Lynn.
Do you have? You said the rate dropped after parental consent was required. Do you or anybody have any information as to why it dropped after consent was required? That's because, you know, why didn't parents send it back at that? Was it because they read the content of the survey, or it was just we had these other problems, quote, the so-called lack of interest and so on? Or do you know, or does maybe somebody later on know why it dropped?
Representative Lynn, through the chair, and I think it will address Representative Wilson's question too. To my knowledge, no one has pursued a survey of the parents in the households where a slip didn't come back. But I could be wrong. Just because I was at the top of the list today didn't mean I was the smartest person on this issue. what I can tell you is that the parents that will actually be affected by this law are just about 20%. Currently, 69 to 70% of parents, we think, are returning the permission slip saying yes. And that's based on 2007 return data. And 10 to 11% of the parents read the slips and say no. I choose not to participate, which is great.
What was the percentage again?
10 to 11%, which leaves 20% of people in limbo. So whatever those parents decide, that's really not our issue. We just want those slips back so that we would presume that at least some of those parents are going to say yes. And that will help get us, we just need to get over the 60%. This bill as written doesn't affect the 10 to 11% of parents who are engaged and read and say no, or the 69 to 70% who are engaged and read the slip and say yes. It doesn't affect them at all. It's just 20% of parents who, for whatever reason, whether it's they think that by not signing anything or returning anything, they're saying no, or if by not returning it, they're saying yes, or it may be that they're not interested. We don't know. As far as I know, no one's pursued that to find out why they didn't.
Thank you.
I can't help but smile at the fact that both, if there's sides in this thing, both sides are betting on or wanting to take advantage of an anomaly of human nature that I can identify with. If I get a piece of paper, you know, and it makes me uncomfortable, which, you know, a YRBS survey may, I can just see myself, you know, or just conveniently forgetting. And the other side, you know, so we're both, you know, it's just an interesting, I don't think it's very measurable, but, you know, who's what here, but go ahead.
And to address the final question that was raised, Representative Seaton, when we read the bill, and talked it over with board members, our understanding was that the notice requirements in Section D would apply to the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. And that's important to us because while we have a duty as a planning and coordination body and as an end user of this data, we're very excited for it to be stronger data. We also have a duty as a conduit for public comment and to fairly advocate on the part of our stakeholders who are split on this issue, to do that balancing act ourselves and coming up with a position. And the fact that the way that this bill is written protects a parent's right to choose whether or not their child participates and also gives the student the right to choose whether they participate, not against their parents' wishes, but if I said yes, Junior can participate, and Junior said, I don't want to do that, then that's fine. He doesn't have to.
Good.
That was balancing for us. So it balanced our need as an end user, because we really want it, and we make a lot of decisions based on this YRBS data, with the fact that parents that are board members were concerned, just like members of the committee and people in the public. And so by protecting the parents' rights, but also extending that right to the student, because some of these questions are personal, we felt like that effectively balanced the public interest in the data and the private interest in choosing whether or not to participate. And I think with that, I've actually said everything I meant to say. Are there additional questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Another part of the question, we'll have... next, we'll have, I think we'll start going to the list here out on the web. So, but part of the question that I wanted to include was, I wonder if in the bearing, when we're looking at this, on the constitutionality of it, I'm wondering if the fact that the right to privacy has been extended to children beyond what the parent has control over might have bearing on this question, too. And again, I bring this up because I would like this discussion to happen. I mean, I don't, I'm not an attorney, but there is case law, you know, that things can be done without parental consent. And yet we have, in this case, the parent signing away rights of privacy for the child and for the family. And it's a valid question.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If
Representative Seaton.
Section 2 applies, and number 8 on page 2, line 3 and line 10 there, that a student may refuse to answer any specific or all of the questions on the survey. If that applies, then even if a parent responds that or allows the survey to be taken, the student themselves can deny filling out any one or many of those questions or any of the questions. So I'm just trying to, and I understand if the, under Section G, if all those conditions didn't apply, but if we construct it so that it, that does apply, so that even with the parents consent, the student has the right to object. Does that take care of the question? I'm trying to frame a requirement here.
Yeah, I appreciate you pointing it out, Representative Seaton. I had not seen that, and it does seem to make answer the question. And you know, again, I'm my purpose is to get this on, not to necessarily answer the question right here, but that is a very valid factor. But to let this question be on the table, so that if the sponsor wants to address it in the next hearing, again. No other questions? We'll go online then. I think we'll start here with the school district school board member, I think, Sammy Crawford in Kenai. Are you online?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Crawford, I believe she had another appointment. She'll be submitting something in writing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll go to Marilyn Davidson in Kodiak. Again, school board, school district person.
Thank you. This is Marilyn Davidson. I'm the Director of Instruction for the Kodiak Island Borough School District, and I am making this statement in behalf of the district. And I'm just going to go ahead and make my statement. If I can answer questions following, I'd be glad to try to do that. At this time, the Kodiak Island Borough School District is divided in our thinking regarding this proposal and the idea of passive approval. Points in our thinking that are in support of the proposal are, first of all, the information gained from surveys is valuable to us in many ways, allowing us to monitor and adjust our programmatic development, adoption processes, and revision processes. Second, we do need to hear from as many of our constituents as possible in order to determine an accurate picture of the communities we serve. Points not in support of the proposed change include, first, the support and protection of parent and family rights is of high importance, as is the need for involvement of all parents and families in their children's education. As we work in this district to increase parent involvement in all aspects of their children's education, this would be a reduction of active involvement in an area that is sensitive and personal. It could potentially diminish the interaction between parents, families, their children, and the school. Second, in the most recent survey regarding drug use and sexual behavior requiring active consent, and I believe that was the YRBS, Kodiak High School, our largest school, achieved an 80% response rate. While this required some effort on the part of staff members, there is great value in the personal contact with parents and families. And as an aside, I can just add, as one of the parents who had failed to respond to that, I received an email. I responded to that. I printed out the form that was attached and was able to get that back, and my students did participate. I don't know of any incentives that were offered to parents in regard to that. Third point. In many cases, parents and families of younger children, and I believe YRBS, and I would stand to be corrected if I'm wrong, I believe YRBS goes into middle school. And for us, that includes grade six. And in many cases, parents and families of younger children in particular have deemed some of the questions on the survey as highly inappropriate for their child's level of social development, bringing up thoughts, questions, and potential actions that their children may have had no encounters with and have not had any reason to entertain. In conclusion, we believe that parents and families will be responsive when they understand the need for the information and the importance of the information to the community and the well-being of their children. We believe that the support and enhancement of partnership between families and the schools are vital to supporting the advancement of the education of Alaskan youth. Thank you for the opportunity, and I take any questions.
Thank you, Marilyn. Question from Representative Wilson.
Through the chair, how large is your school? How many students is it?
Kodiak High School is a school of approximately 800 students in grades 9 through 12.
And follow-up, sir?
Follow-up, when?
And so, when you were trying to get some more of the surveys or get the permission slips, did somebody go to their homes? Did they call? What do they do to try to get the rest of them back?
I know about our specific staffing at the schools and the work that we do to communicate regularly with parents. The email that I received was from an office secretary. We do have a parent facilitator position, and that person's job in schools is to communicate with parents. We also have counseling staff through an Alaska Native Education program and other work that we do, who also communicate regularly with parents, because we believe that contact is vital, and do everything that we can to do that. Obviously, it wasn't 100% response rate, but we did get to the 80%.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Marilyn? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Seaton.
Yes, a question was posed by the testifier that, you know, she thought it went down to middle school, but she wasn't sure. And you know, the information that we have on our surveys and the data are that it's high school students from 9 to 12 were surveyed, but I don't know if that's all that is. Do we have somebody from the administration that could verify for us which it is? And I think that'd be important to verify, because she asked the question that she wasn't sure how it was.
Could I speak to that point?
Yeah, the same.
I believe it's the same test. Question one on the test, this is one of the easier questions, okay? Question one is, how old are you? And response A is 12 years old or younger. But response F is 17 years old. And then, of course, if the child is taking the survey wasn't 12 years old or younger, what would be the purpose of question one?
Dr. Herbert, if you would identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm Ward Herbert. I'm the Chief Medical Officer with the Department of Health and Social Services and the Director of the Division of Public Health. Appreciate the opportunity to come and testify on this bill before the committee today. I believe I also can answer some of the questions. I'm prepared to state the administration's position and the reasons for that, but some of the questions that have been raised. We do have Ms. Patty Owen, who is directly responsible, who's a technical expert that I've done a lot of reading. As Representative Lynn, I've read through the survey and learned quite a bit about it. It's possible that you all could stump me, and I'd need to turn to Ms. Owen also, but I believe I can answer some questions. If I could start a little history, the survey was developed by CDC in 1988. Alaska began participating in 1995. As with most other states, and currently all states have an opt-in, except, as I understand it, for Alaska, Utah, and New Jersey. Initially, Alaska participated in an opt-in fashion. In 1999, under House Bill 70, I believe, Alaska moved to our current position where we were initially in an opt-out. In 1999, we under House Bill 70, we moved to the opt-in provision, and since that time we have operated that way, and that's very significant to the administration's position, since Governor Parnell was in the legislature at that time and supported House Bill 70 and has remained consistent in his position. The survey is provided in the school districts around the state on a random selection basis. I don't know the mechanics of that now. It used to be you'd reach in a jar and pull out a number, and it may be on computer now. But it's a scientifically determined random basis where 20 school districts out of the ones in the state are selected each year. And then within the school, on a random basis, classrooms are selected to participate in that. The parents are given 2 weeks' notice and requested to sign permission if they wish to have their children participate. As has been stated several times, in addition to the parents, the children do have the option to say, I do not want to participate. The numbers that I have received are slightly at variance with some of what was stated earlier, in that our experience, the information I have, is that about 17% of parents elect to not have their children participate, and so state in writing. The issue then comes that the numbers that I have of the parents who do not return the survey for whatever reason, because they may not want to deal with it, as Representative Keller stated, they may get busy, they are about 25%. So adding those two numbers together puts us a little below the 60% number. As far as statistical validity, the closer you are to 100%, the stronger your data is. So 60% is not a magic number, but it's a number that the statisticians have determined and that CDC has, that your numbers are then credible and that they can make their decisions in making grant awards. The experience that we have had, according to the numbers that I have, is in 2003, we had reliable data which reached the 62% level. In 2007, the 60% level. 2009, the 62% level. And as was dated, 2005, we did not reach that level of validity. The information you've all stated is used. I would certainly agree with Representative Lynn that the questions are, and some of them are like, do you eat enough vegetables? Do you have 5 servings of fruit and vegetables? Do you get physical activity? And we know that half of our young people do not get enough physical activity. But some of them are very, very personal and very sensitive in there. And I don't think there's any disagreement with that. But the data derived is information that has been helpful in knowing what problems do we need to deal with in our young people. That's a kind of a summary. The administration's position is that we do have concerns about this. As Representative Keller said, that's not to say that the data isn't important and helpful to us, but we have concerns based, one, on the consistency of the governor's position as our governor now, that since he was in the legislature in 1999, he has had concerns. The governor, secondly, encourages the Public Health Division, the Department of Education, to be innovative in trying to get enough participation. The Public Health Division currently provides about $100,000 a year to the Department of Education, to schools, to use to incentivize parents to participate, to encourage students to get the parents to respond. I do not know. It may well be that the schools put additional funding of their own. But that $100,000 that the Department of Health and Social Services provides, the division, is used to incentivize participation in that. And then the third reason that the administration has for having concerns about the bill is a feeling that on balance, the bill does not strengthen the involvement of parents with their children and in their children's lives and in the school, and that it could tend to weaken that. And as has been expressed with Governor Parnell's very strong commitment to strong families, domestic violence, sexual abuse, that it's seen as most consistent to do everything that we can to strengthen families and the involvement of parents with the children. And so that's the position. Mr. Chairman, I'd be willing to and happy to entertain any questions.
Representative Wilson.
Through the chair, is there federal funding that's actually attached to being able to get this 60% so we can use the data?
It does impact on grants to have the data that's available.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me.
I have one. Has there been any discussion in the department? And I don't mean to put you on the spot. You may want to, talk to the Department of Law on this. But as the use of the word private family affairs, is there any concern? One of the fundamental rights in our Constitution is the right to privacy. And I'm wondering if we aren't opening ourselves up to a lawsuit, if we proceed to tighten this. And I was just wondering if there's any discussion on that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm of course, not a lawyer. I'm not expert in that, and I'm not aware of any discussion on that. The intent is to build in privacy walls so that when the students bring back the completed surveys. They go into an unmarked envelope, which is sealed so that the teacher cannot see the results. The teacher receives the results, then from the classroom puts that in another sealed envelope to try to minimize any chance of identifying where the responses come from to protect the privacy. But as far as the legalities, I cannot comment on that.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Representative Wilson.
Have you heard from any school districts that have shown you how much money it's cost them to be able to put the survey out and try to get the 60%?
Yeah, through the chair, I have not, Representative Wilson, but I could get that information.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wilson touched on the grants and whether those are available or not available, depending on whether we have the results. So do you know what those magnitudes are? And, I mean, are those grants, actually addressing domestic violence and eating and alcohol and tobacco and health problems generally? And do you know what the magnitude of those grants would be or that we could not have to address those problems if we don't have the completed surveys?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, we did look for that information. As I stated, the numbers here, we kind of skated by in 2003, 2007, 2009. So at this point, I do not believe that we have lost major grants. Part of it is the concern that threat is there. So we did ask the question to quantify that, and the response that I saw was that at this point it's more a situation of jeopardy.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. And what I was wanting to know is the magnitude of the grants that we do receive, 2009, 2007. What is the magnitude that we were able to get from CDC or from whatever is based on the YRBS?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I will get you the numbers. What I have seen, the magnitude was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, not the millions of dollars.
Okay, I'd appreciate that information, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If you will sure. Give that to the Representative Lynn asked a question, but if you get that information to us, we'll distribute it. Thank you. Representative Lynn, go ahead.
Thank you. I can see that the information that might be obtained from this could be valuable for a number of reasons, but has anybody looked at the potential harm to the student who's taking this test? For example, and I won't read the thing, but about how many times you thought about committing suicide from 0 to 6 or more times. And the point, if you haven't thought about it, suicide, now you have. And then they have questions, how many times have you engaged in specific sexual activity that's named in the survey. And, it goes from, to a rather large number. And could... it could be logical for some student to conclude that some of this illegal and some immoral and even illegal activity is normal. And the answer, if they answer with some kind of a low score on these types of sexual behavior, might they think there's a kind of abnormal here? Nobody wants to be abnormal. So I can see where the information is valuable, but the student who takes this test, if he honestly doesn't fit where he thinks his peers are, could that cause some psychological damage to this student? It's like peer pressure by survey.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, in doing my homework in preparing for this, what I saw was material that was provided by the Centers for Disease Control raising those kinds of questions. And the answers were, relatively short paragraphs, but the response from CDC was that the evidence did not support that asking those questions resulted in, for example, more promiscuity. on the part of high school age young people. But they were just a statement. I didn't read the underlying supporting data for that, but that's what I've seen dealing with that issue.
And if I may, could answering what you think you should be doing, to be quote normal, could that skew the results of this thing? I didn't express that correctly, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, through the chair, I think that it's reasonable to say that high school age young people are subject to other influences, and are other influences about what may or may not be normal, whether we would consider them positive influences or negative influences.
I guess Nowadays normal is what everybody does. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Herbert, for your testimony, and I'm glad we have it on the record. If it's okay, we'll go on to our list.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I will be here, and if there are specific questions, say Ms. Patty Owen, who's the expert who owns the process and can answer other technical questions. So we'll be here if we can give any assistance. Thank you very much.
What I'd like to do now, I think I said Fairbanks about an hour and a half ago, and they're probably, if there's anybody left up there, they're probably chomping at the bit. And what we'll do is work on down. There's at least a dozen here, and we'll go as far as we can by 5 o'clock. I will not, if we don't get done, I won't close public testimony unless it's clear that we're done. Chances of getting to HB 309 and HB 265 are getting slimmer by the minute. That's 20 minutes away here. So thank you for your indulgence on that. We have do we have any more speakers in Kodiak at all? Because we're there. Okay, let's go to Fairbanks. Pat Chimbers, are you there?
Yes, hi, I'm here.
Please go ahead. State your name, your affiliation, and for the record, and go ahead.
Okay, my name is Twy Chambers, and I also call it, I also go as Pat. I am a citizen. I don't have any affiliation. So I'm a parent, and I'm a Alaskan, a baby Alaskan. I just moved up here. I oppose that SB 101, because every decision that has to do with our children should be in our parents' hands, not on anyone's hands, and it should not be sold out for any money or any position or anything like that. And that is our rights, and our school districts are there to our schools are there to give us, taxpayers, the service of giving our children basic education, and I don't see this as an education, and I don't think our children should have, any this kind of exposure to it whatsoever, even at high school, because they're not in medical school. And so that's my point, and I strongly oppose to SB 101, and I don't think it should have been there from the first time at all.
Thank you, Pat, for taking time to come and testify. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll go to Silver Court.
Here.
Please give your name and affiliation and testify for us, please.
Well, Silver Court, and I'm speaking as an individual, and I have been an educator, and I'm associated with education right at the moment. I listened to another person on there that was saying how he was a teacher and an educator. I have a master's degree in school psychology, and I've been a director of special education, and I have administrative credentials. And I find this sort of a travesty that this bill is even being considered, and I look at it as we are selling parents down the tube to get money. And I put out a deal about a cost benefit, and I think that everything we do should have a cost benefit, and we look at how much it costs to do a program and then what benefits come from that program. And I find a lot of programs have a lot of people in them that are spending money, and there's no responsibility as to how and how effective those programs are. I also find it interesting that the school boards and everything are sort of supportive of this, and yet in their mission statement they say that we are for children and that we invite the parents to be supportive of the schools. And I think one of the reasons why you don't get people returning these permission forms, the support of the schools with the parents is declining. And it's because of some of the behaviors that are going on in the schools as far as the school system itself is concerned. And so parents, when they see one of these permission forms come home, they don't go look at it. If it's from the school district, they throw it in the round file. And I think another thing is that we're setting a very, very bad precedent by doing permission by omission, and that is what this is permission by omission. And I look back at one time credit card companies did permission by omission, and if you got a credit card, and if you didn't say that you didn't want that credit card, you had a credit card, and you were charged on it. And then finally, the government made a law that the credit card companies couldn't do that anymore. And I said, I think we're setting a very, very dangerous precedent by even entertaining this idea. The other one is we get $100,000 or more to entice the parents. Why don't we pay each parent $10 or $15 to return the permission form? And I bet you would have permission forms floating into that schools. But instead of sending it home with the kids, because most kids, and you know that kids, if they have a bad report card and they get to the mailbox first, their parents don't see the report card. And I think that we need to really consider something like that. So I think this thing really needs to be taken back and really looked at. And so far, I haven't heard too many parents testifying. All I hear is people that are really interested in getting this bill through. So I think you need to reconsider that. I'm against it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate you taking time to come and testify today. Pat Fink, are you there?
Yes.
State your name and proceed.
Pat Fink, and my address is 688 Chena Ridge Road, Fairbanks. I'm a retired teacher, 30 years of experience, and I basically just have some questions, and just let me do my spill, and then maybe somebody can answer my questions. The first one is, how many school district leaders and school board personnel have read this survey? The second one is, from 2005, when we had a large turnout of students taking the survey, have these questions changed since then? And number three, which is probably a fallacious question, but I want to ask it anyway. Does the school district need permission for a drug test? And must they get this permission before they administer the drug test? And the last question is, does the school district demand permission for immunization shots or any other pill trips, which have already been mentioned and so on? My remediation for this, if we're going to receive expensive funding, if we're going to receive funding for expensive programs, why can't this questionnaire be sent home with the student and the permission slip? If we're going to spend all this money to administer it, a lot of parents do not have the internet, so they cannot download this questionnaire, and they really don't know what it is. I didn't know what it was all about until I downloaded it several days ago. So those are my concerns, and if anybody would like to chime in and give them some answers, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Pat, in light of time and at the risk of sounding like the expert, there's three of your questions I want to just say that it depends so much on the district. you know, how many school district leaders and personnel have read it. I think it would go vary from district to district and school to school and be very difficult to get that information. As far as the question is, does a school district require permission for drug tests? At least here in Juneau, it takes active permission. In other words, somebody has to come in and sign. That's for athletics, you know, and I don't think the drug testing goes outside of that realm. And there's a lot of experts in the room that can jump right on this if I misstate. There's one more thing. And then the field trip response, again, that would vary from district to district. But a PAT or whatever, the one question about have the question changed, I have no idea. So if one of you has a response to that, I appreciate it. But in the meantime, Representative Wilson.
Pat, I'll get the answers for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I'll email them to you.
Thank you.
No problem.
Does somebody in the room know if the test has changed since 2005?
Test expert.
Identify yourself. We finally got the test expert herself up here.
My name is Patty Owen. I work for the Division of Public Health, and I am the statewide YRBS coordinator. And in terms of the questions changing over time, they really have not changed since 1995 in terms of general content. There are some opportunities that we have to modify the questionnaire a little bit and add some emerging issues that have entered the scene in recent years, such as adding a bullying question or adding a drug question about prescription drug use without having a prescription. But overall, the questions, the whole idea of the survey is to track trends over time, so the consistency of those questions have been there from the beginning for the majority.
Thank you.
And I had a question for the lady who
testified. Oh, yeah. Good.
No, not for her. But
oh, okay.
Thank you.
Representative Lynn has a question for you, Pat.
Was it Pat? I could.
Pat Fink, yes.
What was your reaction when you read this survey? Was it good reading? What was your reaction?
Well, I was really kind of startled. Not that I'm a prude or anything, but if you ask questions like, how many people have you had overnight at your house, you're an adult, or have you had sexual intercourse, that would really be very intrusive into my private life. And yes, on the whole, I was startled. And I'm not opposed to this, but I would like to have the parents read this and give permission, not administered by omission. I mean, I think that's unconstitutional.
Thank you. I know I was shocked when I read it. If I asked those questions, some kid selling lemonade, did somebody probably call the cops?
Thank you so much for taking time to come and testify, Pat. Harriet, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and give us your testimony.
Okay, I'm Harriet Plan, and I'm just a private citizen. I've been in the state for 32 years. The school board should never usurp the responsibility of the parents. If parents want their child to participate, they should sign and return the form. It is the parents' fundamental right and right responsibility, not the school board, to determine what is best for our children. Don't assume non-return is non-interest. School boards are branching out from teaching our children to value judgment retrieval systems. To say we will miss out on federal forms unless we give up our constitutional rights is wrong. Why ask government for funds in the first place? Why not permit more involvement from churches, community, social, and private sector? Why do we hear more and more from those in control, like the state school boards and others, that they assume the general public does not have the intelligence or care enough for their kids to get help? So those in power must make the decisions for us. Maybe the difficulty in getting the form back indicates we don't want this law passed, not parent non-interest.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We have a question from Representative Wilson.
Have you read the survey yourself?
Not totally.
So you have partially? Or not at all?
Partially.
Really good part.
So how would you feel about giving that into a classroom, that survey, as a teacher?
No way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Harriet. We have 5 minutes left. I have 11 people on the list, and we're, you know, and I will gavel out because I don't want a rebellion from my troops here. And we probably won't get back to this bill. We'll take a few more here as time allows, but we probably won't get back to this bill until about, we'll try for the 23rd of February, but it'll probably be after that, and we will properly notify it. It won't be under bills previously heard only. We'll notify it so you know that it's coming. Representative Wilson.
Before you do that, too, could we possibly get a survey from 2005 so that we can see how they've changed? I mean, if it's available.
I see nodding of heads, and I think that the experts in the room will get those to us. So thank you. With that, we're going to go ahead and proceed here. I think we'll go to Cynthia Height in Anchorage. Are you there, Cynthia?
Hi. I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I have two children in the Anchorage School District, and this is not a bill about data collection of benefits or deficits or about the process or about, you know, the test itself. It's about the process of collecting this data. And I oppose SB 101. The bill's intent is to seize the rights of parents and award them to public school administrators and teachers. The argument for this bill is that somehow parents are not getting permission slips to give consent or not sending them back, allowing their children to take these private information surveys. Every parent enrolling their child in the Anchorage School District each year signs a blanket permission slip. It lists what surveys will be given and a box to approve or disapprove of your child taking these anonymous information surveys. So I do not understand why YRB would not fall under that same permission slip. Parents have spoken, to use Mr. Obermeyer's words, my research shows that parents have spoken by not giving their approval. And this bill attempts to strip the parent of that right by saying, hey, they don't really know what's best for their kid, so we need to take care of that for them by taking their choice away as a parent and giving it to the school staff. There was a time when I believe representatives voted in by the people, went to the Capitol believing their job was to protect the rights of the people. There was a time when I believe the public education system was there to teach our kids math, reading, writing, and science so they could be productive Americans, grow into productive Americans. There was a time when I believe my job was to work to make money, to raise my family, and pay my taxes. Trust me, if I did my job, you all would do yours. I am taking time off my job today, not getting paid, because I don't trust these beliefs anymore. When I see bills like this, I don't trust that my money is being used to promote and protect my rights. I don't trust that my money is being used to teach my children. The intent of this bill is to fund public agencies using a public agency on the backs of our kids by stripping more parental rights. This bill needs to find its appropriate place on the cutting room floor. Thank you for your time.
Any questions? Representative Wilson has a question for you.
Thank you, Cynthia, for taking out your time. So you're saying that in the Anchorage School District, when you register your children, it lists the surveys, including this one, and you give permission or, I mean, do you, like, check a box giving permission or not giving permission?
Right. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it's called Important Rights for Parents Concerning Student Surveys. And it goes through. You have to enroll your kids in school every year, right, in August? Everybody has to do it. It's given to you. We have stations in the Anchorage School District in the high school. You have stations. One of the stations is signing this parental form. You don't get this sent to you through email. You don't get it sent to you through mail. You have to do it in person when you sign your kid up for school. I have it right here in front of me, the 09010, or it's 09101. 2009-20 surveys will be aggressive victims and bystanders survey. It'll be given on August through December 2009 to grade 7. And you have to sign that the permission slip says, I give my approval to administer anonymous surveys to my child this year, or I do not give approval to administer anonymous surveys this year. This has nothing to do with not giving the permission slips to the parents. This has to do with the parents are saying they don't want to do it.
Thank you, Cynthia. Just a point of clarification, that's a permissive thing. In other words, some school districts do that, some don't.
So to have them all do it. Excuse me, I'm sorry. With respect, have them all do that.
Okay, thank you so much for coming and taking time to testify.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I have list. I'm going to read the list of the people that are online that are still there to testify. We're not going to take testimony from them today, and you're sure welcome to call back when we bring this up again. But we have John Conwell from Onalaska School District. We have Nancy Wagner from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. We have Sharon, I'm going to kill the word, but Vassair, I think it is, from Anchorage School District. Tim Steele from the Anchorage School District. Michael Karoski from the Anchorage School District. We have Jim Minery online from the Alaska Family Council. Debbie Joslin from Eagle Forum, Alaska. Emily Neenan from the American Cancer Society. Laura Muller, self. And Kay Lundenpura, I think, from Alaska Youth and Parent Foundation. I sincerely apologize. I consciously made the choice not to try to hurry through this and shut everybody up so we could just press on. We'll come back and thank you for your patience with us. With that, at 5:01, we're adjourned.